Hello and welcome to Tantramar Report on CHMA 106.9 FM. We're broadcasting from Sackville, New Brunswick, the heart of the Maritimes, and the traditional lands and unceded lands of the Mi'kmaq people. I'm Erica Butler. It's Monday, September 6th. Happy Labor Day, everyone. Coming up on today's show, we talk with Town of Sackville Chief Engineer Dwayne Acton about Thursday's massive rainstorm and how the town fared with nearly 82 millimeters of rainfall in a single day. That's coming up right after some more local news. The emergency room at the Sackville Memorial Hospital will be closed overnight tonight due to a physician shortage. Horizon announced the additional closure last week. The ER will close at 4 p.m. today and reopen at 8 a.m. on Tuesday morning. Horizon says anyone requiring urgent medical care will need to seek treatment at another hospital and advises to call 911 for emergencies and 811 for healthcare inquiries as normal. Sackville Town Council meets tomorrow night for their monthly special council meeting. The agenda starts with an in-camera report at 6:30 p.m. from the local RCMP. It's the first time in a long while that the RCMP will report at a closed meeting. The decision to move police reports in-camera was announced last month at council. CAO Jamie Burke said it was an operational decision that had been discussed with council at another in-camera meeting. The public agenda for Tuesday's meeting starts at 7 p.m. with discussions of council's procedures bylaw, as well as the town's workplace harassment and violence policy. Council will also discuss the purchase of road salt for the winter and the fall pride parade. Reports detailing the items up for discussion will be released publicly shortly before Tuesday's meeting. Residents can attend Sackville Town Council in person or watch or participate online. This will be the first meeting since the pandemic began where the observation gallery will be open at full capacity. Pre-registration to attend council in person is no longer required. Two Sackville residents were in court Friday facing drug charges. Carrie Ann Sears and Colt LeBlanc made their first appearance in Moncton Provincial Court on charges of possession for the purpose of trafficking. The case has been adjourned until October 1st to allow LeBlanc's lawyer, Michael Deneige, time to review disclosures from the Crown that only arrived the day before. The charges stem from two search warrants executed in late April in Upper Sackville. Police said they received several complaints of high-powered lasers aimed at airplanes in the area dating to December 2020, and after an investigation identified a home of interest on Upper Abishagan Road. Police said they observed drugs in plain sight while executing a search warrant related to that complaint, and so returned the next day with a second search warrant. During the two searches, police seized a high-powered laser, a drone with drugs and money hidden inside, and a replica gun. Police also seized significant quantities of what they believed to be crack cocaine, crystal methamphetamine, hydromorphone pills, and other prescription pills. The site of the searches on Upper Abishagan Road is a home belonging to Colt LeBlanc. That home was closed temporarily by a court order on June 7th under the Safer Communities and Neighborhoods Act. The SCAN Act allows the province, with the cooperation of the police, to evict residents suspected of certain illegal activities and found to be causing disruptions in the neighborhood. Shortly after it was closed by the court, LeBlanc's home was destroyed in a fire. LeBlanc is currently in custody at the Shediac Jail, being held in remand on assault charges. LeBlanc and Sears will be back in court on October 1st regarding the drug charges. Finally, on today's Tantramar Report, in a single storm last Thursday, more rain fell in Sackville than in the entire month of August combined. So how did the town handle 81.6 millimeters of rain in a single event? To get the lowdown, I called up town engineer Dwayne Acton.
Well, I appreciate you speaking with us on your day off.
Oh, no problem.
So Thursday night was, I guess, a sort of exciting time for Sackville. We got a large amount of rainfall. How did things go overall?
I mean, overall, I think we fared out fairly well. You know, it was obviously very intense. We had some very intense times throughout the storm. Obviously, the retention pond, I think, did a fantastic job in holding the water. That was coming down to Lawrence Street, so it did its job. But again, I keep telling you and all your listeners that we didn't get a 1 in 100 year storm, and the pond was basically at the brim last night. It dropped a little bit overnight, but it did handle the flow for the most part. The other aspect that we got lucky with again this time is the again, being a tidal community, our tide cycle kind of helped us a little bit. It was only full tide. I think full tide was around 9 o'clock last night. So during the heat of the storm, we were somewhat on low tide, which we benefited from. But if things had been different and the high tide was in at the crux of the storm, we might have seen a different story. And we're always going to be faced with that. You know, what are the tides doing? So we lucked out again a little bit at the tide cycle during this storm, and obviously it let up in the evening. But we did have some isolated flooding in our common areas. The heating plant near Mount A, King and Main, at one point in time, the system just couldn't handle it, and it flooded there. We did attempt to close the road down, but the water quickly dissipated. We were able to we detoured traffic for a little bit, although people still go through the water. Booster pump, which normally floods, I must say, with the work that the town did, and we put a new storm system in there. Other than the bumpiness, we will get that repaired, but it handled the flow. There was no flooding there. We were quite pleased with that. But we had isolated flooding and washouts in our common areas. There's a spot on Ogden Mill that often floods and causes issues, Walker Road. So we had some washouts. And then the other one, Erica, was 106. I'm not sure if you're aware, but we did have flooding on Route 106, right just past where the 935 interchange is with 106. So you know how you go, Wood Point Road is one way, and you can go to Dorchester around the turn the other way on 106. It did flood there. And again, I keep harping on it, but it's clear again this time that we need CN to step up to the plate here and work with us, because the water can't get through the tracks. So it's a bottleneck. So that's why, again, it flooded 106. Now, at about 11 o'clock last night, I was still able, the water was across the road, but I was able to get through with a vehicle, no problem. We thought we were going to probably have to close that road down through the night, but water did go down, and by this morning, it only was across one lane, so the other lane was open. So, but again, without CN working with us and getting more capacity underneath the tracks, it's going to continue to be an issue in the future, which we've been telling them and trying to work with them. But they feel that they've got more than adequate piping and infrastructure under the tracks there, and they don't. And it was clearer again this time. So we again we had some issues there where the road was flooded, but it wasn't what it was in the past. I think a lot of that could be contributed to the new abateaux that were put in by DTI a few years back, Erica, if you remember. They did increase and put new abateaux in. I believe it was about 2 years ago now they did that work, and that obviously helped the Carter Brook situation and allow the water to get out to the Bay of Fundy quicker, easier, faster. So that was definitely helpful. But the Carter's Brook and all the bridges, the water was just right up to the underside of the bridges. So there was some nervous times for us and throughout this whole event.
Do you have concerns about that? Those abateaux along Carter's Brook, along that road, do you have concerns about water backing up because of the silting in the abateaux, which I imagine would, I guess, restrict the water flow there?
Yeah, I mean, that was always a concern concern for DTI and myself, and I did look at it during the storm yesterday. The thing with the silting is usually when you get an event like this, all that silt that's deposited near the abatoirs, those new abatoirs, is washed back out because of the intensity of the amount of water that's going through the abatoirs.
Okay.
So I think there was some silting of the new abatoirs, but clearly with the capacity and the amount of water going through, it flushed that out. As far as along 106 and abatoirs there, it's more infrastructure under the CN tracks that's concerning for us. Has been.
Okay.
We as a town have indicated that to CN and sat at tables with them, and they say they have adequate infrastructure, and we're trying to keep telling them that you don't have the right infrastructure in the right spots. And
it's not flooding their tracks then? It's just backing up and flooding the road?
It isn't, but I tell you, I spoke to a gentleman last night. I was out again patrolling about 10, between 10 and 11 last night. And there was a CN truck parked on the side of the road that was monitoring the side of the tracks. And I stopped and talked to him and told him our frustration. And he said, well, we're frustrated as well, him as a worker. They were concerned because you have all this water sitting on one side of your tracks and virtually no water on the other. You could theoretically get water that migrates through your tracks.
Mm-hmm.
And when you get water moving through rock and material under the tracks, you know what can happen, right? You can get material moving with it and potential washouts, which was a major concern for CN. So I'm hoping that this event and the fact that CN were on scene and saw exactly what was going on, that they might be concerned enough to talk to us and to hopefully plan to do something there.
Now, at the retention pond, Friday morning, the water's up to the level of the culverts there that drain it, or that have the water coming into it, I guess. It's also over top of the pass along St. James, and I gather it was over the road at St. James for a bit.
Yep.
Was that retention pond at capacity on Thursday?
I would say very close, yes. Very close to capacity. I mean, there's a little bit more that could go in there. Obviously, because of the topography of St. James, you're going to St. James will flood in that one low area, and still give you enough capacity to. You'll see that there are all the way around the retention pond. There was more capacity that could go in there. The difficulty is, yes, you can put more there, but you will run the risk. You'll run the risk that Lawrence Street, being at the elevation it is, and the piping that's all coming, all the water is coming down to Lawrence through the infrastructure on Lawrence and into that pond, that Lawrence itself could start to flood and be part of that retention pond. So. That's a concern, and we've indicated this. we're only partway there with that one retention pond. As you know, it is capacity of about 40,000 cubic meters, but we need another, 60,000 cubic meters to in order to handle a 1 in 100 year storm. So there's no question that it was nearing its capacity. And there's no question that had things been different with the tide and maybe that, we didn't hit the 1 in 100 year storm. And if we ever hit the 1 in 100 year storm, I can assure you that we don't have the capacity in that one retention pond to deal with all the stormwater. One of the other things that we noted through this storm that I just wanted to mention was our lift stations, our sewage lift stations. We had a staff member patrolling all of our lift stations. All of our lift stations were maxed out, meaning they were at their maximum capacity. They were at their high level limit. The pumps were working overtime to try to pump the sewage. And that a lot of that has to do with a lot of residents in the town have lift pumps or some stormwater from their basements is going into the sanitary, and it's unfortunately, it puts a huge strain on our lift stations, and last night was another example of where our lift stations were maxed out, and again, we were able to keep things moving, and staff were able to keep our stations up and running. But again, it's a storm like this is a huge strain on our sanitary system as well because of all the, I'll call it infiltration of stormwater into the sanitary system.
Right, and you think the infiltration of stormwater into the sanitary system is coming from basically people's sump pumps.
Yeah, I'm sure if you were to go around the majority of houses, I mean, we have old houses, new houses, all the new ones are required to divert their stormwater to a stormwater ditch or something. If you were to build today, those are comments that I make in as a town engineer. But all the old infrastructure, the old houses, you could be assured that a lot of their sump pumps are pumping directly into the storm. The sanitary system, which again puts huge overloads and huge strain on our sanitary system.
I come from Halifax, where a good chunk of the sewer system is combined, if you can believe that.
Yeah.
It's like a nightmare every time it rains there.
Yeah,
we
typically don't have a combined system. And I say typically, I know when we did the Lawrence Street project first phase, we found several storm connections that were directly going into the sanitary. And obviously, whenever we find them, we divert them and separate them. But again, it's very, very difficult to separate the sump pumps in all of the thousands of houses that are in town that are pumping their stormwater from around their foundations and their basements into the sanitary system. So it definitely put a strain on the system, and we definitely noticed it last night. And again, we were lucky that we were able to keep everything up and running, and urge people to put backflow prevention devices on both their sanitary and storm in their house, because if those lift stations are maxed out or they fail, you could get sewage that could back up into your house. So we encourage, and the bylaw encourages everyone to ensure that they have backflow preventers in their houses.
Okay. And I guess this event adds a little more, urgency and weight behind the application, the funding application for the next phase of that Lawrence Street project. That council just renewed.
Yes.
Renewed the application. It's still sort of sitting there on someone's desk at the Federation. Is it the Federation of Canadian Municipalities?
No, I believe it's with one of the funding programs that we've applied for.
Okay.
And we applied for under these the funding, and I sorry for not knowing the exact name, but I can get you that if need be. We have an application in, and council authorized staff to kind of update and renew that application. It's still in the queue with the funding program, and we're hopeful that we might be accepted and get approved for that funding, so that we can look at that phase three, which would allow us to create that additional retention that we really need to handle that 100-year storm that we could get tomorrow, for example.
Right. Well, thanks very much, Duane. I appreciate your time. And
right.
I hope you can enjoy, the rest of your holidays here.
Yeah, sure. No problem. Thank you very much, Erica.
Bye-bye.
That was Town Engineer Duane Acton speaking with me on Friday. An updated funding application for the third phase of the Lawrence Street Stormwater Mitigation Project was resubmitted to the province in January of this year. That's it for CHMA's Tantramar Report for this Monday, September 6th. It's Labor Day, so enjoy your day of rest if you're lucky enough to get one. Remember, to get in touch, email us at news@chmafm.com. I'm Erica Butler. Thanks for listening.